Bring me sunshine in your smile.
How you doing anyway? Sorry I've been away, not had a podcast since the Anderlecht game, but I've been busy doing stuff. And while I've been away, we've obviously had the fantastic performance against Aberdeen, beating Hibs in the cup, and then we've got on the other side of the city, the gift that keeps on giving. So decide to have a podcast and get two of my top 75 guests that we have on our podcast. So get Mark Cooper and Hullboy discussing the Aberdeen game, putting that in the context of what we can do in European football. And then, of course, how could we not touch on the big topics of Scottish football, which is Hearts building a retro 1960s style office block instead of a main stand. And the news today, as we record the podcast, that Rangers have unfortunately decided to get rid of Pedro Caixinha. So we touch on those two bits, but mainly we're talking about Celtic against Aberdeen, how Celtic perform against Bayern Munich in the game coming up, and what we can do in Europe. So this is me, Harry Brady, passing over to him, Hullboy, and him, Mark Cooper, and there'll be more chat at the end about some very special Celtic Foundation stuff.
And it is, let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.
So I'm joined now with everything that's going on in Scottish football. I thought we needed twice as much experience, and actually one of our guys can be an expert in the news in Scottish football because he talks four words. He knows four words of Portuguese. So
Andy, that's you.
So we have Hullboy and Mark Cooper. How are you doing, lads?
Very good. Very good.
Good, thanks, Harry.
So before we get on to the Portuguese news, which is broken today as we're doing the podcast, we will talk more importantly about Celtic last night. So, Andy, how good was, to be a Jim White impersonation, how good was last night?
It was very good. It was to put it in John Collins terms, you know, the tempo, the passing, the movement. It was all last night I think Celtic were just an absolute joy to watch. Really, really stunning football. Tactically, just got it spot on. Team selection wise, you know, I mean, when I saw the team kind of listed, you do wonder when, you know, Sinclair and people like that are not in the starting 11, but then, you know, you just shouldn't have any doubts at all. And I think, you know, we can pick over the detail of the game, but I think kind of the post-match reaction from Derek McInnes kind of more or less said it all. He really did have to just hold his hands up and say, you know, Celtic were just absolutely fantastic, which they were.
Mark, and Andy made a comment there about the team selection. When it came out, that was quite a surprise. No Sinclair, no Roberts. What did you think of the team?
It was quite interesting because on one level there wasn't actually that much that had changed. Mm-hmm. Like I saw the post game interview with Tierney, and the female interviewer was talking about him being like pushed up, but actually his starting position to me didn't seem to be that different. I know you're technically, if they put it like down, they'll put it down as 3-6-1 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But essentially, they're the two centre backs there, as per normal. Lustig, who's normally more or less on that line anyway, mm-hmm. maybe he's slightly further up. And then Tierney, who's basically on the halfway line, is his starting position anyway. So, for me, the biggest difference was, okay, so we take Sinclair out and McGregor was pushed right in. And it was like McGregor and Rodric. McGregor was on the left behind Dembele, and Rodric was on the right behind Dembele, but both as kind of like central midfielders behind one striker. But that was just moving McGregor inside. For me, that was like only the kind of formationally the only real difference between it. Okay, you can say that Tierney was allowed to push up a wee bit more times than Lustig Wimp stayed. But, you know, they basically do that anyway. Like, Lustig isn't the player he was 5 years ago when he's getting to the opposition box and crossing it in. Like,
yeah,
that finished like 2 years ago. So then what was interesting was, okay, so Brown was like being in the role that he was really good in last year, where he's just like picking up, he's like the first pass from the centre backs, mm-hmm. for the centre backs, and he was controlling everything. And then you had those three, Armstrong, Rodric and McGregor, kind of rotating a wee bit, always having an extra man in midfield. And Aberdeen, like, when I was watching it for the first 10 minutes, I was trying to work out where everyone was. Mm-hmm. And it seemed as though Aberdeen were trying to work out where everyone was for 90 minutes.
I think it takes to both of you guys about the fact that, and maybe the team set up, the slight changes that you've talked about were based on the fact that Aberdeen two or three times have tried to go man for man everywhere in the park against us. So the problem with that then is, if they can't work out where we're supposed to be, they're following us round the park. Instead of trying to play football, they're busy following us round the park.
That's exactly how I saw it. I think, you know, the serious point about the movement last night was it wasn't just players interchanging roles during the game. It was actually that they were making runs that were kind of like maybe 20, 30 yards off position. Mm-hmm. And I've heard recently kind of summarise as saying that actually if you take an individual footballer and you ask him to play 15 yards further left or 15 yards further right from what he's used to, that's a huge difference for him. But what Rodgers has got the players doing is he's got them not to be frightened about moving around the pitch. So, I mean, sometimes Dembele was coming so, so deep. It was almost as though he was going to take the ball off Boyata and Beaton in the places where Bruno usually takes the ball. So amazing movement last night.
You mentioned Dembele there. I like Griffiths, and Griffiths scores goals, and Dembele scored goals. But I've just felt in the last game and a half of football that we've seen, you can see why Dembele just makes more of a difference than Griffiths does, and why I think that's what we've missed in the European football, is somebody, he just brings everybody more into the play than Griffiths does. It's just that those margins that make the difference. What did you think of Dembele last night, Mark?
Yeah, I agree with what both of you have said there, and it's almost like intangible, the kind of difference. Sometimes, like, there's just a little bit more. There's also, obviously, he's got more strength and power, but he's also a bit more direct sometimes. And when he's kind of driving at defences, and it isn't like he's incredibly kind of like tricky on the ball, but the defence are kind of wary of what could happen, and you see them kind of backing away a bit. Mm-hmm. And also, just like on numerous occasions, just winning kind of like high 50-50 balls, or just winning free kicks, and it just kind of brings a team up the pitch. And then, like, you're thinking, okay, it doesn't matter so much against Aberdeen. But then you imagine we're playing Bayern Munich or PSG, and we win that free kick, what, 20 metres inside their half from a kind of 50-50 ball. And it would just give such a relief to the team. Like, That was one of
them. It's the reason why I always liked Samaras in European football, because Samaras always had a way of getting a foul given against him when the ball was played up to him.
Yeah.
And that's what Dembele does, and it just allows you to, when we are playing opposition who are better than us, it's just a quick win of moving 20, as you say, Mark, 20, 30 yards further up the park. One of the things you were saying there, Mark, about moving inside, about McGregor moving inside, we'll go back to the Aberdeen game in a minute, Andy, but we're trying to find that magic formula that allows our team to get, okay, we might not beat PSG, but we have a closer performance against PSG. Do you think that system against Aberdeen last night might be closer to what we need to do in Europe?
I think there's something in that. Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I actually think that I'm not saying that we've been kind of like frightened rabbits in the headlights, but I don't actually think that we've performed as well as we could in certainly in the Bayern game, for instance. And I actually think that if we may not have had the ball as much against Bayern, but if we'd played with the same confidence, I think that's the word, confidence, as we did last night, then I think we would have fared a little bit better against Bayern. Whether we would have beaten them is another thing. They're still streets ahead of us in terms of the quality, the individual quality of play that they've got. I think Brendan actually, I think he gets the tactics right for these games, but ultimately it's down to individual players. I mean, if you look at somebody like Armstrong had a really, really strong game last night.
Yeah.
But actually against Bayern, he was really, really disappointing by his own standards. And that wasn't just because of the quality of the Bayern team. You know, Armstrong was poor on the night. I think you know, if you saw Celtic playing to their full capacity, I think they would run the likes of Bayern much closer.
Mark, what do you think?
I think there's two things: is when we have the ball and when we don't have the ball. When we have the ball, as Andy said, people have to be brave on the ball. But there are so many times when we are kind of rotating the ball. Say we had the ball in kind of from our midfielders against Bayern, mm-hmm. and they're finding men, but it's always the safest pass. And then gradually you just see them go back and back and back and back, almost like a Z. And then it goes back to Gordon, who looks up, and Bayern have, you know, are on every single man, and he's kind of searching around for a spare guy, and then he just, you know, lost a pass either into touch or into a kind of 50-50 situation that they pick up. For me, the Brown was an exception to that. Brown would ask for the ball and receive the ball with pressure. Like, even when someone went into him and like almost hit him or was kind of, you know, like hustling him or whatever, he could retain the ball and find a pass, whereas other people, kind of understandably, were nervous about causing that turnover. Like, if you're Gamboa or if you're, you know, whoever, mm-hmm. and it seemed that you in your head say, okay, this isn't working really, because we're just eventually passing it back to Gordon, who has a kick 20 metres behind us, and he just punts it up, and they're picking it up. Okay, really, I should be the one to take responsibility here. The problem is that then there's Coleman on him, and he gets dispossessed, and he looks like the weak link if that happens, say, 2-3 times.
Yeah.
And that happened with Brown. Like, Brown caused two instances where fairly close to our goal, he was caught out. But because he's taking responsibility the whole game. So
it's interesting you say that, because that's sometimes my point when people criticise our performances away from home in Europe and somebody picks out Ncham or somebody like that.
Well, I was just going to say about Ncham, because Ncham actually fits for me into the category that you've described Brown as being in against Bayern, because Ncham wasn't frightened to have the ball and be on the ball. And I was quite surprised at, you know, the number of people who were kind of critical of Ncham. I thought Ncham did quite well. And I think there's that kind of like conditioning amongst European-based players who, you know, as they develop through academies, One of the things that they come to learn is about being comfortable on the ball and not panicking.
And when someone's on them as well.
Yeah, like exactly.
The guy's like a metre away and they're still asking for the ball.
Yeah.
And our instinct is, no, we have to find the free guy. And they're like, no, give it to me. I'll withstand this guy and I'll just lay it off into someone else.
And actually, if you look at the makeup of our squad at the moment, and I think this is testament to what Brendan is doing in developing players that, you know, we thought were kind of like not going to make it under his regime. People like Armstrong, people like McGregor. I think he's trying to get them up to speed very quickly with being like players like Ncham, like Dembele, like even Beaton. For some of the weaknesses that Beaton has, he's actually not frightened to receive the ball. And Rogic is another one. Rogic, you know, there's almost a smile on his face if he's got 2-3 players around him and he's calling for the ball. Because he actually wants to work his way through that conundrum and either release other players or actually kind of with his quick feet get beyond those kind of close marking opposition players.
But that point there is sometimes, you know, I've been in a discussion and somebody said, oh, Ncham, if we use him as an example, Ncham's having a bad game because he made that mistake and the other mistake. And I will always say, yeah, but what about... And I'm picking this person only because we've mentioned him already as being quiet in European games. What about Armstrong? And then they might come back and say, well, Armstrong's not done that or not done it. No, but Armstrong, you've not noticed Armstrong because he's not made any mistakes, because he's not been involved in the play at all. He's gone anonymous. Right. At least in Ncham, you're noticing in Ncham because he's involved in the play. The only reason he's making mistakes is because he's trying to get involved in the play. I would rather have a player making mistakes because he's trying to get involved in the player than a guy who has gone anonymous and you know, what's he done for the last 15 minutes?
I think the other thing as well is, I think there's kind of like a generation of football supporters who've grown up where everything is based around kind of the assessment of the individual. Mm-hmm. And I know I've said this before, but football is a team game. And most managers will approach it on a team basis rather than about individuals. But I think Brendan's really elevated that to another level. And I think, you know, if we go back to last night, I mean, for me, just as a team unit, Celtic were just absolutely superb. People going about kind of like well-oiled machines and things like that, but the cogs were all in place last night for me. And that kind of like second guessing of what your fellow teammate was going to do in certain positions. I mean, some of the passing. I think there was one move, it was probably in the second half, and it was almost like a kind of like watching a kind of like a rapid cam of a chess game where Celtic just pinged the ball about, you know, to get beyond the Aberdeen defence, and it was just fantastic to watch.
I think that's a really interesting point you've made there, because then you take away Sinclair and Roberts, who people would say, some people might say they are two most talented players, or perhaps two of, you know, the top three or four. And they've gone out of the team, and they're both amazingly talented, but they're both pretty individualistic. Mm. And then, you know, you take those two out, and the team was functioning in a more fluid way. More passing, more interplay is an interesting point, I think, that.
Carry on, Andy.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is kind of like Brendan quietly kind of reinforces this whole philosophy, you know, where, I mean, he's done it when he's been under criticism about playing Beaton in the centre of defence. But he said, what we're doing is we're teaching all of our players to play in various positions so that they can all play in the system. And what that means is that, yeah, people can cover, But we all know modern football isn't, you know, that kind of traditional rigid 4-4-2 anymore. Or if it is, it's not going to get you very far. Mm-hmm. Or whatever it is, you know, 3-5-2, 4-3-1-2. So, I mean, people were talking about Celtic playing a 3-5-2 last night. But, you know, when you actually see it in reality, the movement is just so encompassing across the park that at any given point, you're not looking at some kind of rigid 3-5-2. And I don't mean this as a criticism, but if you think about when Martin O'Neill used to deploy a 3-5-2, it was kind of fairly static and fairly rigid. We're not seeing that with Brendan. If you know, at any point last night, he's described as deploying a 3-5-2 system. How do you feel about that, Mark?
Related to that about our team now. So we're saying before about this two things: when we have the ball, and when we don't have the ball. When we don't have the ball, we do need to be more like a Martin O'Neill team in a way. Mm. We have to be kind of like, we have to be more cynical, tighter, more aggressive. Well, we're too passive when we're playing these teams. We're far too passive. Like, when I watch like Uruguay play against Argentina or Brazil, or like an example, Atletico Madrid playing against one of the big teams in Europe or the two big teams in Spain, as soon as they lose the ball, they're pretty structured and they go into like a wall of defence, and they're like appealing for every throw-in. They're challenging for like 30, 70 balls. They're swarming around the opposition. When I watch Celtic against Barcelona in a 7-0, we barely touched them. Last week against Bayern Munich, at some point, I know it isn't kind of, you know, romantic Celtic football. At some point, I want Armstrong to hit someone. I want, when a ball goes in the box, I want our defenders to be pretty much all over Lewandowski or whatever, getting their using their body, getting their elbows in front of him, making it awkward for them. Like, this is what like the best defenders in the world do. This is what.
Do you think this might have an issue? Might be related to the principle of, we are, I mean, there at half time last night, what was it, the stats? We had something like 75% possession last night. Do you think this might be, you know, this whole thing of, because we're not getting tested domestically, so when we lose the ball domestically, we're still trying to get into position where we're immediately playing on the front foot. So we're immediately playing our attacking football with the ball, getting back to your without the ball, with the ball. So we're never ever really having that sustained period of playing without the ball, and that's a real difficult mentality to swap from one to the other. It was something I was saying to someone the other day when they were talking about who we did or didn't sign in the summer transfer window, and I said that the biggest problem we've got, and it maybe Brendan's got this over a 4-5 window plan, but the biggest problem we've got is the type of player we might need in that off the ball scenario for playing Bayern Munich and PSG is nothing like the type of player we need for virtually every domestic game that we've got. So Patrick Roberts is the perfect front foot player for what we need for domestic football, but perhaps not what we need for playing Bayern Munich and PSG. So it might take 4 or 5 transfer windows to get there.
Yeah,
because you've got 50 different teams.
I think there's something in that, and I think the other thing is as well is, I think that's where it becomes more important what's going on during the week between games, where Brendan's got a fairly large squad of probably across the whole squad the best players that are playing in Scotland at the moment. Mm-hmm. So it would be interesting to know what kind of 11v11. Scenarios they are playing during the week in training, so that you know, 11 of those players are tested against the 11 who might have the ball more often, and how they shape up to combat that.
Well, I do know because I've seen after a couple of games, if you were to hang about long enough in the ground after a game, there have been a couple of games where they played on about an eighth of the pitch, a 7-6 yep. or 7-a-side game, and the whole concept for that is so that, getting back to your point, Mark, the players can only ever receive the ball when they're under pressure because it's such a tight park that there's going to be two people on them. So I think some of this stuff that we're talking about then gets back to the point we just talked about, or that you guys talked about a minute ago, of bravery of the players. I think that the issue is the players are not brave enough to move into the positions they need to move into.
I think there's a little bit of that. I think the other thing as well is, nothing stays the same. And I think what's happening is that people tend to make comparisons with the current Celtic team with previous Celtic teams in Europe, for instance. But one of the things that I've been intrigued about, and I'm not a particularly a big stats man, but I actually feel watching Celtic currently under Brendan Rodgers, even against the likes of PSG and Bayern, that we have periods where we are more comfortable on the ball than we were when we were playing in Europe under Neil Lennon, under Strachan, and sometimes even under Martin O'Neill. And if you look at some of the stats, some of our possession stats in Europe over the last two seasons have been much better. But the other variable that is changing is that certainly the pot one and the pot two teams in the Champions League, their strength in terms of their quality compared with the quality that Celtic were facing, you know, in the Martin O'Neill era. It's not to say that they weren't facing better teams, but the gap was smaller to a certain extent. So I think actually, if you put those kind of two variables together, I think that shows that Celtic have actually improved quite a lot under Brendan in Europe.
So you mentioned there, Andy, about with the ball, they're maybe doing better. So what you're really saying, Mark, is that you think we just need to be slightly more organised of moving into a defensive position when we're not on the ball? Or structured?
Yeah, more structured.
Yes,
definitely. But also more aggressive as well. Mm-hmm. And also towards a referee, like there does seem to be a little bit of America
too long with all this kicking people charging down the referee.
maybe if someone did that and got red carded after 2 minutes, then it might not be a great idea. But I do think it's something I love about the Croatian team is that on the ball, they're so composed on the ball and comfortable on the ball and creative and quite slow as well, which maybe goes against making use of transitions and all that, but they keep the ball, they rotate it, they have lovely players, they, you know, open up spaces and whatever. And then as soon as they lose the ball, they kind of change into this dirty, cynical team that appeal for everything and, you know, are always on the edge.
Yep.
And I would love us to play like that. I'd love us to go away and not be overawed to be shouting in the faces of, you know, these elite players.
Rightly or wrongly, Mark, I don't think you're ever going to see a Brendan Rodgers team play like that and have that kind of attitude. I just don't think he approaches the game in that way. I never saw that in any of his other teams.
Although Suarez was like that And okay, Suarez is Suarez. He's,
Suarez,
you know,
is from
almost,
the same way you are. I told you, you've been watching too much.
Yeah, I know. But the best team he's had, Rodgers. Like that peak, that one season with Liverpool.
Yep.
Suarez was a demon like that. He was
definitely, yeah,
chasing everything. And one other point, I don't want to labour that point too much, but apart from that, okay, so after the PSG game, we were talking about Sinclair and Roberts being a bit too individualistic and kind of making dribbling too much, like from a halfway line or whatever, when the probability is that they're not going to go past four or five players and score one to goal. So maybe we should retain the ball.
Yep.
That happened again in Munich.
Yep.
And there's quite a few occasions, and for me, Sinclair was more at fault in that respect against Paris Saint-Germain, but away at Munich, like, I remember quite a few times watching it, and Gamboa was like 15 metres behind Roberts, kind of following him up the park.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no real danger for Bayern. Like, it wasn't like they only had two defenders back. They basically had the whole team kind of in a fairly decent defensive kind of structure. Yeah. And I'm just thinking, we haven't had the ball for 5 minutes. Just turn around, pass it to Gamboa, and let's have a bit of possession in the half. And it was too, we turned the ball over too quickly, too many times.
I thought it was interesting, and this is not a specific criticism of Kieran Tierney, but it was something about, I was thinking about when Dembele came on. In the first half, I felt your point, Mark, about we pass and pass if we, when we do have the ball, and then eventually there'd be a zigzag back, that then it gets back to our players who are then under pressure, and the option is pass it to Gordon. There was three or four occasions where I thought Tierney hoofed it up the park under that type of pressure, which after the game, Brendan Rodgers said, in the first half, we hit the ball long far too often, and we're not a hitting the ball long team. But the other thing I did think was, again, that's where the difference between if you'd had Dembele on the park or Griffiths on the park, because even if the players do feel under pressure and think, well, the only out ball here is for me to just launch it up the park, at least there's somebody who might take it, get a foul, and so the launch up the park isn't a wasted, the ball comes straight back again thing.
And I think what that does as well is, if you look at somebody like Dembele, who's got the strength to kind of hold the ball up, and it's amazing in that very, very short space of time how the rest of the team can get their shape again to react to that. I mean, I think you're right in terms of your observation about Tierney. And it was a tough game for everybody.
So I'm not being overly critical of him.
Exactly. We'll leave the Scottish media to that. But, you know, I think Tierney, probably by his own admission, and certainly you could tell from Brendan's comments that he had a relatively poor game. But he's, you know, he's learning. He's still young. Yeah. We just shouldn't take some of these players for granted, you know, when they're still kind of like 19, 20, 21. We've got a pretty young squad, and it's so encouraging that, you know, players like Tierney are coming in and then kind of making those positions their own.
I thought it was interesting, talking of a young squad, we played this week our second game in the Premier League under 23 competition thing, and in our first game we got thumped by Swansea, playing players that none of us would recognise. This week we played Atletico Madrid. We had Doohan in goals, who is at Morton at the moment. Calvin Miller was at left back. Mikey Johnson played. Kouassi played. Edouard played up front. Liam Henderson started, and Ewan Henderson came on. But the point being, we won the game 2-1.
Right. Very good.
Now, we get beat by Swansea 6-0 in the first one, playing the players who would play an under-20 game in Scotland. But against Atletico Madrid when we played people with a wee bit more first team experience, or people closer to the first team, but still all under 23, we beat Atletico Madrid.
I mean, that's very encouraging. And I guess one of the other things to add to that is I've caught, not the full games, but bits of the Champions League youth games.
Yep.
And what is really noticeable, compared again with kind of previous years, is that the Celtic team is completely set up in the same way as the first team.
They're playing to the
same kind of dynamic, the same principles, and that for me is really, really encouraging.
And although they've lost, they've competed. There's been Correct. A point in the game where you've thought they could. I mean, I think in both games against PSG and Bayern, there was a point where we could have actually then gone to take the lead. I just have to touch on the one thing that I did notice when I looked. Celtic 2, or Atletico Madrid 1, Celtic 2, goal scorer for Celtic, M. Johnson. I did have a second look back to the Aberdeen game.
He had a very good game away at Bayern.
Mikey Johnson,
His feet are so quick. And then when he makes that kind of little bit of space, twitchy
feet.
And then he has a little burst of acceleration that takes him past. Like, he creates that space, he kind of unbalances the kind of the right back, and then he has like over like 8-10 metres or something. He just bursts forward. I would love him to be kind of be getting on for 15-20 minutes if we're 2-3-0 up at home, coming on for Sinclair, just seeing a little bit more of him, getting used to the first team.
Well, he's now getting coached. He's now getting coached by Sean Maloney. So twitchy feet man Sean Maloney should assist in that as well.
Yeah, and I think that'll come. I think what you know, what it looks like to me is that you know, kind of the coaching squad from Bendon downwards are actually kind of spotting these kind of like natural characteristics and strengths within individual players, and then saying right, okay, let's just build that into the system. You know, and Mikey Johnson's a perfect example of that. So he's still playing in that system, but he's doing it with those natural skills that he's got, and they're being allowed to kind of like flourish when they need to.
Do you know, so getting back to the Aberdeen game, when I was growing up, one of my favourite goals in football when I was growing up was the first goal in the 1974 World Cup final, which was a penalty to Holland. Mm-hmm. And the reason I love that...
a penalty?
No, but the reason I love the goal is because Holland just passed sideways and sideways, and gradually the Germans...
Oh, right,
Germans then moved up on them, and then in 2-3 balls, the Dutch then just play the ball straight up the park, and the Germans are caught out, and they give away a penalty, right?
Yeah.
And that's, growing up, that was one of my favourite goals because it was the principle of slow and then really quick football and spotting space, and I loved that. And I'm not saying that it was the same, but the principle of our first goal last night, we were passing the ball about. Aberdeen's man-marking thing meant that Aberdeen were busy following our central midfielders who then started to run wide. So it was all the space, and Boyata's just stepping forward and forward. And then quickly he just plays the ball to Rogic, who does that quick turn and pass on to Dembele, and then through. So it was the same principle.
Yeah.
Showed you the benefit of a passing game.
Was that the time? I'm not sure if that's the time or if it was slightly after. But there's a moment where Boyata has a ball, and Brown's kind of gone back almost into a centre-back position, and he's kind of shouting at Boyata to make use of the space.
Yeah, he's standing pointing his arms back.
Like an assistant manager on, like, doing a like, training drill. Like, now you go!
And the amazing thing about that was the Aberdeen players so busy running around doing their man-marking, chasing us, oblivious to the fact that this giant hole had opened up in the middle of the park that Brown was standing orchestrating in. It was great football, and it was a great taking goal, wasn't it, Andy?
Oh, very good. Yeah, I mean, the thing for me is that I think the kind of latter stages of the move, once Rogic was on the ball, you can almost anticipate now, where, because you've already seen the run from Dembele, so you know that he's going to be in there. You then think, well, is he going to get caught? No, puts the ball in, and Tierney just absolutely drilled it. And he's not, he's not afraid to really put his foot through the ball mm-hmm. when he's in those positions. And actually, speaking of somebody who's a left-footed player myself, the balance that he puts on the ball and the weight that he puts on the ball, I thought obviously for the goal that he made last night, but also there was a cross just before where. Was it Considine at the back post? Who you knew as soon as Tierney had crossed it, I think it was to Dembele, that Considine wasn't going to get that with his head. And it was just inch perfect. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about him. He's the ability for him to kind of like wait a pass and wait a cross. I mean, I think a lot of, you're talking about Scottish football, a lot of people over the last few years have been talking about Andy Robertson, great left foot, but with him, I always think it's kind of, I'm not saying it's a hit and hope, but I don't think it's as considered as Tierney's crossing, and I think sometimes we just take his crossing for granted, but you can tell that he's really picking out somebody within the box when he makes those crosses.
And overall, we just generally bossed the game. I mean, it was only like, it was one of these things where sort of half an hour afterwards, I thought to myself, we've just played the second best team in Scotland and near beat on, who people are criticising as a centre-half, absolutely breezed through that game.
Yep.
With no pressure.
Did you see the pass where he gave the eyes?
It was great, wasn't it?
It was just unbelievably good.
Yeah.
So, if we anything else you'd like to pick out from last night's game before I move on to any other talking points that might be in Scottish football today?
I think the only thing for me is that it tells you so much that you don't start the game with Sinclair and you don't start the game with Griffiths, but you end the game with them, and that just tells us everything about how far we've come in terms of like both squad rotation but also squad strength.
Mark?
No, to be honest, I think we've covered it. It was the best domestic performance we've seen for quite a while, I think.
Okay.
So straight after that game finished, I then flicked on the scores and saw the Rangers were winning 1-0, and it was 2-3 minutes into injury time or something like that. And I sent a text to a couple of people saying, fair play to Kashinya, because every time he has one of these catastrophic results that has everybody talking about him possibly losing his job, he has tended to win the next game. Then the next text I got from someone was just, ha 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 ha. And then the next text that was followed by, and they missed a penalty. So I immediately went on and saw that they missed a penalty. Ryan Jack is an absolute diddy. He disrupts his own penalty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they go up the... And then I get this really long text from my mate, who is a Rangers fan who was at the game, who said, tonight just demonstrated the problem of BBC Scotland not having somebody at the game, because he obviously was listening to the radio whilst at the game, because he said Chick Young had no idea what was going on because they were watching on the telly and going around. So so are either of you surprised that Pedro Kashinya has been fired today?
If they were in any way a normal club, I would say no. But I was at that point thinking today, do you know what? And which a lot of other people have been thinking is they might want to sack him, but for financial reasons and kind of other things that have happened since they appointed him, they might not be able to. So they've obviously found a way financially they're going to, you know, kind of pay him off. But I think that probably now will give them a whole range of other problems, you know, not least because they've got a squad that is just all over the place. I mean, we talk about how we kind of, you know, kind of really turned it on against Aberdeen, but actually Aberdeen have got a pretty good squad. Mm-hmm. They're pretty well organised. You look at kind of, you know, teams like Hibs who've kind of progressing all the time, but they're just in complete disarray. And actually, he's been fantastic fun, Pedro, but he's actually kind of like taking them back almost to kind of like the year zero of 5 years ago for them.
As he said, texted someone this week and said, I do wonder whether, I've always been, I'd rather Rangers never existed and never came back and there was no Rangers. Obviously, they're a new club, but their supporters consider them the same club, and it's the same people supporting a team playing out of Ibrox. I do wonder whether Rangers the new Rangers in perpetual mid-table status is almost more amusing and better than if they didn't exist at all. as somebody then said to me, a bit like that joke, if somebody's wanting a lift in the car and just as they get to your car door, you drive off. And then they chase after they chase after the car, you drive off again. Every time they think they're starting to improve, they go back.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you get your Glasgow Comedy Festival, and then in between your Glasgow Comedy Festival, you get, you know, there's always these kind of like odd little comedy clubs that kind of like pop up here and there. Well, this is like the permanent Glasgow Comedy Club. It's just every single day something comes out, you know, and maybe that has been more so because of Pedro being in post. But I mean, if you look at it, if you go back to March, and I think I put something on Twitter today, you know, Brendan Rodgers was asked about him back in March when he was appointed. Mm-hmm. And he actually said in the press conference, which he wasn't being disrespectful, he just said, I've never heard of him. but the counter stance to that, you know, you're kind of listening to one of the top European coaches say that, regardless of the fact that he's the Celtic manager. But then you've got the Scottish media who are immediately, they're not doing the kind of Craig White billionaire type stance, but they're making him out into be this kind of like top, you know, kind of European coach that's been plying his trade with great effect in South America and elsewhere. And you think, this is just complete bollocks.
Well, can you imagine? I mean, I didn't think they would sack him until I found out earlier today that although he's on a 3-year contract, the notice payment is 3 months' pay.
Oh, yeah. I've seen somebody mentioning that.
So that's why it's cheaper. But can you imagine, even if, say, Aberdeen, McInnes went. Now, I've also heard today that McInnes doesn't want to go. So say McInnes went to Rangers. Can you imagine how much the press would laugh at Aberdeen if they went for the fifth best manager in Qatar? Yeah, that would be an improvement on the status that Cassini was at before Rangers took him in.
It's an absolute shambles. Like, a year and a half ago, so after Rangers drew the semi-final and won a penalty shootout,
yeah,
Warburton's response to getting into the Premiership was, it was completely selfish, and it was to buy Hill, Cruncher, Garner, Waghorn, Barton, and the outlay in wages for these players that had no resale value.
Yeah.
It was something like 7.5 or 8 million for like Cruncher, Hill, you know, all of these put together. They have no resale value. And then, you know, it turns out that these players can't hack it in the Premier League. And they have no resale value. You have no money coming back in. So, okay, what we need is a director of football and some sort of coherent policy, so that we're not going to be in that situation again. We're not going to have a manager just bring in players who'll have no resale value again, and we're going to organise it better. And they even explicitly say that, basically. So we need to employ a director of football first. Mm-hmm. And about 3-4 weeks pass, and they appoint this Portuguese guy, no director of football, based on one of their ex-players from Portugal, who then plies them with, what, four or five players?
Yep.
Have they got a director of football now?
I was going to say, did they not get a director of football?
Yeah, they did.
About 3 months after.
Yeah, but the thing about this, where's this guy?
He was, there's some absolutely comedy gold photographs from last night's game of the director's box. Because obviously Pedro's in the director's box. So you can see the likes of Dave King and Paul Potts Murray and some of the other kind of like grum-faced idiots who actually kind of made the decision. But then right in the middle next to Pedro, there's this guy, and I'm thinking, I've got absolutely no idea who he is. And it turns out that he's their director of football.
As we talk, I'm just Googling, do Rangers have a director of football? If you start typing in, do Rangers have, it actually comes up. Director of football. So June, Rangers confirm Mark Allen as director of football, new director of football. And then there's an article here in August. Rangers director of football Mark Allen reveals he intends to make the Light Blues a selling club. Allen wants to ensure the club establishes a reputation for sourcing players of great potential before moving them on for a healthy profit. Well, shouldn't he have been the go-to person the press have spoken to all this week? Actually, in any other club that I'm aware of with a director of football structure, he would be the guy that would have gone to all this week to discuss Pedro.
But you shouldn't worry. I mean, we shouldn't worry ourselves too much about this. But if you look at every bit of the structure of their club and the individuals involved, it all just says small time.
Yeah.
So they've got people like Stuart Robertson, who's their MD mm-hmm. or CEO, equivalent of Peter Lowell, anyway. But you kind of you look at him at his CV. So actually, when he was at, I think it was Motherwell, he was just the club secretary. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't anything other than that, which you know isn't a particularly kind of owner's role. It's kind of an administrative role, and I think probably when he was there, the CEO at Motherwell was Leanne Dempster, who's actually now at Hibernian.
Yeah.
And if you look at the way that Hibernian is being run and developed as a club now, I've got no time for Rod Petrie, but Leanne Dempster is very competent at what she does, and she obviously makes sure that wherever she's working, that the football club is run, you know, albeit on a smaller basis, but in almost in the same way that Peter Lowell runs Celtic, mm-hmm. you know, uncontroversial, keep everything on an even keel. But this Stuart Robertson guy, and what I find so funny is every time you see him in one of these director's box photo shots, they're all looking glum, except for Stuart Robertson, who's got this ridiculous, stupid-looking smile on his face, as if everything's going really, really well.
He's maybe just chuffed to bits because he's earning 100 grand a year as the Rangers CEO, when he used to be the secretary of Motherwell.
But apparently he was one of the appointment panel for Pedro.
I know. but they've got the problem as well, I mean, I had this. My mate is a Rangers fan. I remember when Rangers started again in the third division, talking about, he said then, and he and I were both agreeing that what Rangers should do is focus on very young players, and at the fourth, the second, the third, and the second tier of Scottish football, augment that with some older solid pros who would be useful to take them through the third, the fourth, third and second tier of Scottish football, but it will be at the right time to jettison when they then come into the top flight. But they'll have had youngsters with 3-4 years of experience of first team football who'll be getting better players and really have a strategy all focused upon when they get to the SPL. They've not really spent big and they've got their money to spend. Right?
Wait. Are you suggesting they shouldn't have been paying Lee McCullough $25,000 a week in the fourth tier of Scottish?
Call me a genius. And so he sent me a text last night when I said, you know, about changing the manager, and he said, well, we've now got the problem of no fans have got the patience for us to have the strategy that we should have had when we were in the bottom tier. And the bit he didn't chuck in is if they don't have the patience for that, they now also don't have the finances, compounded by, so they bring in a Portuguese guy and then allow him to sign all these players from Mexico, and players who, forgive me if I'm wrong, Mark, but they could have a really good standard of living in the Mexican leagues, or they would have left Mexico.
Yeah. How much, if Rangers are now a selling club, how much profit do you think they'll make on Herrera and Peña? That's a rhetorical question. We don't have to get.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that is.
If they're skinned, which their chairman has admitted, so what we've got is the chairman's admitted that he's skint.
Mm-hmm.
We also
Paul Murray's skint.
We also know there's a strong likelihood that the chairman will be, and possibly those who acted in concert with him, will be struck off from being directors for a period of time. So the point being, they're hamstrung and frozen in terms of being able to spend money. So based on the fact that they probably won't be able to afford to pay compensation to Aberdeen for McInnes, and maybe even not to St Johnstone for Tommy Wright, who do you guys think that they will get in as a manager?
Well, part of me says I don't really care, and I think that all of the compounded problems, it doesn't really matter. But they'll definitely go for what they call a quote Rangers man unquote. Their supporters' mentality wouldn't allow them to consider anything else at this time. So it's going to be a Billy Davis or an Alex McLeish or the dream team of Barry Ferguson and Kenny Miller.
Please.
I personally would just... Lee McCullough could get back in there somewhere. Maybe not on $25,000 a week, Mark.
Mark, who do you
say? It's funny, if McCullough had done a half-decent job at Kilmarnock, he might have been the front-runner.
Maybe not, because he was starting to become friendly with Brendan Rodgers and praise Brendan Rodgers in press conferences.
Neil McCann
is the only Scottish, the only manager who's lost a game at Ibrox this season. So, we've no idea and we don't really care.
No. Although, Cathro is looking for a job, I think.
Talking of Cathro, one final piece of news. Firstly, Rangers have got to go to Murrayfield. What do you guys think of the very retro 1960s office block that Hearts have built for a main stand?
Unbelievable. I really do hope that they play the theme tune to The Office when they come out to the pitch. It would be fantastic. Handbags and drags.
One of my mates sent me a text today. He said, I'm in Edinburgh. I've just gone past Tynecastle. It's as bad in real life as it looks in the pictures.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I've got to go and pick somebody up from a Halloween disco in 5 minutes. So we'll bring this to a close with.
How is Eddie Pearson, by the way?
he's fine.
He's good.
He's dressed up as Iron Man tonight. Predictions, we've got Kilmarnock on Saturday and then Bayern Munich on Tuesday night. So, Andy, first up, the two scores.
Kilmarnock will be comfortable. I can see this winning by further.
Even with Stevie Clark, what, they've just got a result at Ibrox, and any team who gets a result at either Celtic Park or Ibrox loses the next game.
Yeah, we're obviously petrified of Chris Boyd and Chris Burke. Yeah, that's going to be 4-0. I actually think we might get a point against Bayern.
Mark?
Well, I'm still thinking about the head-to-head against Bayern, so we might need that 4-0 against them.
Do you know, I tweeted that. It was a pity Sinclair was chopped off, because I think 4-0 to do the head-to-head. And some guy replied to me, patently thinking I was serious.
Does that happen on Twitter?
Yeah, just once or twice. So, Mark? Kilmarnock first up.
Let's say 2-3-0 against Kilmarnock, hopefully resting a couple of players, having everyone completely fit, and then please going at Bayern, getting in their faces. Let's say 1-1.
Do you know, I too think we're capable. I know they were great, and I know they took the foot off the gas, but the fact we had a goal chopped off that was onside and we hit the post, I think we are capable of
it was funny. I was watching Celtic TV's highlights, a 6-minute highlight package. Yeah. By the end of it, I was thinking, God, we could have actually got a score draw.
Right, well, with that optimistic note, I will say, Mark and Andy, thanks very much.
Cool. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Harry.
Cheers.
I stay out too late. Got nothing in my brain. That's what people say. Yeah, that's what people say.
I hope you enjoyed the podcast today. There'll be more along soon. You won't have to wait as long as last time. Those of you who contribute to the Celtic FC Foundation will know that there is an opportunity to win a trip with the Lions to the famous training base at the Seamill Hydro. The Foundation has a membership scheme called Walfrey's Wish, which costs £3 a month, and selected from the winning categories listed below, 6 lucky supporters will be chosen to accompany the Lions to lunch at Seamill Hydro to visit their old training base during the 67 and before, and to hear their stories. I can remember for a brief period I lived down in West Kilbride and used to nip down on European nights to see them down there. Things have changed, and the prize includes travel with the Lions, lunch and a tour of the facilities. And to enter, text the word CHAMPION, CHAMPION, to 720, that's 70020, to give £3 a month, or you can sign up online at www.celticfcfoundation.com/champion. The winners will be selected from each of the following categories: an existing Walfrey Wish supporter plus guest, a new Walfrey Wish supporter plus guest. So if you don't subscribe, you can do it, so don't forget to sign up. And champion, texting that to 720 or going to celticfcfoundation.com. There's also a supporter who recruits a new member plus their guest. So to enter in this category, just send the name of the person you have recruited to cfcfoundation@celticfc.co.uk, and for each name you'll get an extra entry in the draw. The competition closes on the 3rd of November, so you've got about a week to get that in, and winners will be announced on the 7th of December, with the trip to Seamill taking place in December. At the beginning was Bring Me Sunshine by Morecambe and Wise, so no great trailer or intro music or cover version. Playing below me just now, is Scott Bradley's Postmodern Jukebox cover of Taylor Swift. Anyway, enough of me. There's a wee bit about Foundation at the end, and that was Mark Cooper and Hellboy, and I'll say goodnight and God bless. Good night.
Shake it.
Shake it.
I said shake it, shake it.
Shake it, shake it.
I said shake it.
Shake it.
I said shake it.
Shake it.
I said shake it, shake it.
Shake it, shake it.
Shake it, shake it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, oh, oh. I'm just gonna shake, 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 shake.
This is a dream come true. I set myself a goal to become a coach, and this is the happiest I've ever been because I've earned it. I've been a community coach for the Celtic FC Foundation for the past 2 years. I was born with no arms. I also have scoliosis of the spine. My mum and dad put things in between my toes when I was young. It was to get a good grip of things so I could learn to do things myself. My confidence has grown so much since becoming a community coach. Taking football sessions and meeting new people has been excellent. I work with children and young people from lots of different backgrounds, and particularly those with disabilities. When I was younger, I bothered about people looking at me, but I don't worry now. I tell other kids that, especially the ones with disabilities, you can do whatever you want if you put your mind to it. The Foundation's Learning Centre is like a second home to me. Whether I'm coaching or just having a cup of tea with the other coaches, it's a great place to be around. I'm really at ease at Celtic Park. When there's a tour on, I usually sneak in behind and always get to see the trophies again. You never get fed up with that. In and out of work, I'm getting better every day. I've already gained 4 coaching qualifications and I'm going for my 5th. I'm really grateful for this opportunity. I live and I breathe Celtic, and I want to do my best for the club I support. I can't take a smile off my face. This is the happiest I've ever been. This is a dream come true.